Morning. Welcome to Sunday Take. My name is Blaise Olson. I'm your host. And I come to you on a Sunday of sadness for the death of Alex Pretti, who was killed yesterday by federal officers in Minneapolis. I come to you as we try to make sense of what has happened in our communities. And today I want to emphasize that while Minneapolis is getting the attention, this is impacting our whole state. The presence of federal officials, the tactics and strategies they're using, the inability for the state to find a way to help federal officials. We are not going to point any fingers today. This is a show about the politics and the mood and the feelings of Minnesota. And so that's what I want to share today, is where are we in the mood? What could we possibly do to rebuild trust? And what are we going to do about the reputation of Minnesota? Those elements are intertwined. Many things have been foisted on to us in this latest episode from the federal government, but also we have to look at ourselves in the mirror and say, how are we going to bring the state together? I'll have some thoughts on that in the take, but also to really start to think about trust and reputation of our leaders. And the reality is that we are lacking leaders. We are lacking leaders, and some of it remains surprising. So one of the things that I learned about leadership young was that you have to not just get people to follow, but you actually sometimes have to step aside or negotiate to a place where it might feel like you've lost, but it's in a place for the better of your group of followers. And that is something I think is lacking here. One of the things that just came out this last week was the Edelman Trust Barometer. It's a global indicator. It's something that I watch closely every year. And the signs are not good. We are at such a trust void in our culture, amongst our government, that it is not sustainable. So we'll dig into that next. And then we'll have Representative Dave Baker give his view on what it looks like to have federal officials in a rural community like Willmar. I'm Blaise Olson. This is Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to Sunday Take. I want us to just take time this morning and pull back. There's a lot of channels and there's a lot of outlets that can take real-time reaction. And, we had a lot of that yesterday with Susie Jones and Steve Thompson. And so today, knowing that a lot of you listen to this on podcasts throughout the week, I want to pull back on something that I talk a lot about and something that I've highlighted on this show is trust. So this week, an annual report from Edelman came out, and it's the Global Trust Barometer. And this is an annual measurement of reputation and themes. So for interesting timing. It's been a 26-year report, and in 2005, trust shifted from the authoritative voices to peer-to-peer trust. And we've seen that continue. In 2016, you started to see a mass class divide between the haves and the have-nots. And think about 2016, and the election of President Trump the first time. And then 2023 was navigating a polarized world. 2025 was trust and the crisis of grievance, which we have lived for the last year in Minnesota. In 2026, it's trust amid insularity. And so we are insulated. However, we insulate ourselves in these bubbles, we have to be mindful of it. And I think it's one of the things that, as you're talking to people who either agree with you or disagree with you, that we can't keep insulating ourselves to only those who agree with us. And frankly, we can't just keep being aggrieved by those who disagree with us. And so from the insularity becomes this grievance. And the trust barometer lays it out that it's the resentment towards the system that's rigged against you. And I think that's one of the common pieces that I talk about regularly when I speak, is that the spectrum has become a circle. The far left and the far right really want to foment divide. But they are also, as we know, the most reliant on government and reliant on a government they don't trust. And I think that's the lesson of this week, is just this government we can't trust. And wipe away the personalities, wipe away the people, the candidates, and think about the distrust in the institutions of government. And let's just start with local government, probably the most trusted. You trust your police will respond in most cases. You trust your fire department will respond. You trust your local leaders to make sure you have parks and plow your streets. And as you go up in levels of government, that trust starts to deteriorate and it flips. It literally flips from who's in charge. So the left won't trust a government led by a Republican, and the right won't trust a government led by a Democrat. And this insularity and then the grievance that it causes leads to this polarization. And the polarization finer points, according to Edelman, are economic displacement, discrimination, geopolitical tension, misinformation, and all of this was in the light of a global pandemic. The US ranks 47th amongst all countries on where its trust is. And the interesting thing is that it is the most developed countries that have the trust problems. Meanwhile, the leading rapidly developing countries like China and India and Indonesia have very high trust amongst their population. And so the US trust advantage is better than foreign countries. But still, we don't trust our government. And a lot of that is driven by income. So there's a 15-point gap between high income people trusting their government and lower income people trusting their government. But in the US, that gap is 29 points. Let me say that again. The number of people that trust their government and their businesses and their NGOs, the income gap is 29 points in the US. That just goes to show that the economic disparity foments that isolation, that insularity, and the trust. Other factors that led to it are trade and recession-related job issues. Low-income people fear falling behind from AI, fear foreign actors spreading misinformation. And this idea that I win, I lose, you you lose, I win, is the mindset. And it's this mindset set by our leaders. And I mentioned in the earlier that it is this lack of leaders. It's the lack of leaders willing to really do the work and not be pulled back to a partisan position. And I bring this up because we have to, in Minnesota, just start at the lowest local levels of government to say, we've got to build some new trust in Minnesota. We've got to do it in a way that starts with some core values. Minnesotans believe they have a strong quality of life, according to research, but they're worried about their economic future. They're scared. And our leaders at both the state and federal level have certainly not done anything to do this, to increase trust. But a line was crossed this week that I think is dangerous. And I think it's the immediate correction that we need at all levels of government. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. Listeners are going to get sick of me saying it, is that transparency could rebuild trust. But what could undermine it even more is when government puts out misinformation. And when the White House modified the Nkemi Levi Armstrong arrest photo and shared it out on the White House social feed, I feel like there was a new line crossed. The White House called it a meme. And I would only argue that no matter what your politics, our government should not be memeing us. Our government should not be mocking serious issues. If for no other reason, it declines, it deteriorates, it erodes the trust that any information you have doesn't have a propaganda tilt. Now, I know some of you are going to tell me that all of these folks really want to play the partisan game. And in this show on politics, I get it. But as I've been saying since Renee Good was killed, and I'll keep saying it, is that I'm sorry, there's got to be a better way. What our leaders are doing is not working. And that goes for both Democrats and Republicans. When Democrats call on Republicans to stop being silent, that's a fair call out. When Republicans call on Democrats to stop villainizing federal agents, that's there and real. The real question is, how many more lives are going to be lost? How much more distrust can we have? And what's the end game? We'll talk about more of that in the take, but when I come back, Representative Dave Baker is my guest. He is a state rep from the Willmar area. We had this conversation yesterday, and I wanted to pull back from the urgency of the day, but give a perspective of how a Republican state rep feels about federal agents in his community, what they're doing, how they're behaving, and what it's meant for Willmar, a town that has done well with immigration and growing their economy. I'm Blaise Olson. When I come back, Representative Dave Baker on the Sunday Take. We're back on Sunday Take. My guest is Representative Dave Baker. Representative Baker represents the Willmar area. And Willmar, as I mentioned in the open, has kind of taken a lot of credit of integrating immigrants over the last few years. Their economy has benefited. The agribusinesses in their area have benefited. There's been entrepreneurship from restaurants to other businesses from immigrants. And so I thought it'd be good to just pull out and go deeper into a different part of Minnesota. So many of the headlines are from the Twin Cities, and I think it's important to look at how some of these activities from ICE are impacting other parts of the state. Representative Baker, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me on, boys.
Just set the scene. I know there's been ice activity in the Willmar area. There's been, kind of tension as a community that has done well by making sure that your economy benefited from immigrants. What's the mood of Willmar right now?
Well, the mood of Willmar is, with all my conversations this week, most people, including, I would say, our immigrant community, is saying that if you do law and order and get the bad people out of here, there's nothing wrong with that. I support law enforcement. I want to be clear about that. I support what the rule and the movements that they have to do and to get this horrible broken immigration system starting to clean it up. But I just hope that someday, sometime, we can find a way to fix this nationally, because this is only going to get worse, because this isn't going to go away once you arrest a bunch of people. The part in Willmar that I think I'm hearing loud and clear about is just the real fear that our families are having if they have anything but white skin. You know, brown, black, families are really scared. They don't know exactly what to do. They weren't going to school earlier. Our school numbers clearly show that. We've been meeting with our superintendent, with town halls, with the Somali community and Latino communities, as this last week has been a very busy week, listening to a lot of people. Their fear is real. And again, when you have stories like we have had, detaining people, young women or young men either going to work or being detained, and when then what happens to them, they just want to know, give us information. I think the part that I'm having my most heartburn about is not ICE being here. It's what then happens once they're detained. And I think that my commitment this week has been to try to make sure I communicate that to our federal officials. Our local law officials have been very good about working with us as much as we can and what they know. But I'm looking forward to having a meeting this week face to face with Congresswoman F Michelle Fischbach. She's very interested in learning more about this. She wants to know. And I'm looking forward to having that conversation with her sometime this week.
Dave, as you think about Willmar, it was my familiarity with Willmar is coming out there to host events and roundtables and conversations. As you talk about fear and kids not going to school, how is it impacting the economy? Are people not showing up for work? Are businesses closed? We hear so much about the Twin Cities. I really want to just understand, Willmar, a fairly vibrant greater Minnesota city that has been doing well. What has the impact been on the economy?
It's been a real impact, again, especially downtown Willmar. I talked to the local grocery store owner downtown Willmar, a Somali-run store. Again, they've got fresh products they're having to close or throw away because they don't have the turnover they used to have. Again, they're struggling to try to keep it open because nobody really wants to kind of go out and about. They just don't know. Same thing with the, again, downtown restaurants. When somebody gets pulled over or arrested because they were working in a kitchen, it affects everybody and they all recoil very, very quickly. Friends of mine own these businesses. As in hospitality myself, I am very nervous that they can get through this period of time because their businesses are really being impacted, which then cuts hours to the people that can already barely afford the rent payments. And then landlords are calling me because, is there anything we can do to kind of get this thing going again? I think I've never felt so helpless in my 12 years of being a state representative than I do right now, because I don't have my arms around what all we can and can't do. Again, there are issues we have to address, but the fear is real. Economic impacts are real. It's affecting people's incomes that want to work here, that need to work, but it's felt loud and clear in downtown here.
Dave, immigration was a hot topic during the last election. Obviously, President Trump amplified it. It's been a major Republican issue for a few years. You're a Republican state rep. When you talk to your Republican, party folks in the area, when you were running in 2024, was this on the radar in Willmar the way it was the rest of the country?
I think so. I think immigration was, I think that's the large reason why Trump was elected. I think there was a clear mandate and a movement to say we've got to tighten the border. To me, it was about border security. It was about shutting that down. You know, Blois, I lost a beautiful son to the opioid epidemic here, and it came to the southern border. That's what we were told. That's exactly what we were focusing on. And to me, strengthening our borders was number one in my book. Now, when we move forward here, and I think again, I give credit to a lot of that border has been tightened down a lot, and I appreciate that. Now we're moving into our domestic immigration side of things. And now, how are we handling all this? Again, this is something that we haven't seen. There's been deportations for decades going on. This is nothing new, but I think what's new is maybe some of the tactics that are getting used are a little different than what we're used to. I think that my stories that I hear locally is when, again, a young woman is brought to the Whipple Center and there's no beds there really to have, and she's really shackled for 4 days in a bathroom where she has to stay and wait. Then she's released. These are stories I'm hearing directly from her, not online social media stuff. I'm hearing from their families right here. I don't believe she is telling me anything inaccurate because I'm hearing other stories of how people are treated once they are detained. I am not stopping and telling ICE or dreaming of telling them to stop doing this. But when you do detain them and when you then release them, is there a way we can use some humanity or some respect to getting them to a place that is either closer to home or in a place that is more welcoming than it is just dropping them off alongside the road or having them leave the Whipple building and they got to find a way to get home? There's got to be a better way to treat people that are actually productive humans in our society. They may be applying for a green card, but they're here. Legal status is fine. There are such fine lines here that we've got to identify, and that's what I'm trying to understand is get more information, help us with more information so we can share that with our local residents who really have nowhere to go. We need our information so we know where to find these people more quickly.
I think about Wilmer and what you're saying, and I know I asked about, the election last time and the politics of it, but this is not a, liberal community. It's a working class conservative community. As you talk to other business owners, where their business and politics kind of come together, whether it's in hospitality, whether it's in manufacturing, whether it's in agriculture, especially, most businesses have found compliance, right? They have their I-9 audits. They have double-checked the paperwork. Do they feel as though, even though they've been foisted upon, the compliance, that now even their compliance is, they're questioning their compliance? Or do they feel as though this is just another kind of curveball that they're being thrown as business owners in the area?
Yeah, no, I'm a business owner too, and I've rechecked my I-9 forms for my employees. I've got some Hispanics that work for me. I've got some Somali community that work in our hotel. There's two of them that have been showed up for work in the last couple of weeks because they're fearful. They've called us. We understand it. We are okay with that. We can cover that. But there are a lot of good business owners that have been very supportive of me and my party are very reasonable, moderate people. They just want to make sure they can succeed in this competitive environment that, again, in Minnesota is not easy to do business in. This is an area that they're telling me what is going on. We are getting a housekeeper arrested in the parking lot in a suburb that he owns, and he's got businesses out here, and they're quickly taken out of here and flown to Houston. And then again, 3 or 4 days later, when they finally hear from somebody, when she's been released, they're in Houston with no ride home. I'm hearing this from people that are just not on one side or the other. They want reasonableness. They just want to be able to compete. But now what's happening in Minnesota and the brand damage that again is happening here is going to take us years to overcome what's happening. And if we treat people with law and order that we need to do, but also with the respect that I think we need to do without more shootings and more violence and more protests that just do nothing but raise the temperature, this is the worst thing for us to do as a general economic plan. We have to find a better way to do this. We can't let this go on like it is.
Dave, you're in hospitality. You brought up the brand of Minnesota, the reputation of Minnesota, rebuilding it. Have you talked to any of your colleagues about that part of the story about the challenges that Minnesota is going to have as a brand reputationally, to attract events, to attract tourism, heck, to attract workers who, you know, we need to make sure our economy thrives.
Absolutely. Again, Explore Minnesota has kind of paused all marketing right now. That just, it's not a time to spend any money on talking about how great Minnesota is when we're under this cloud. My friends at Hospitality Minnesota, or restaurant owners, hotel owners, they are looking ahead at events that are being canceled currently. They're being delayed for another 6 months, and hopefully things are going to be better then. The real economy in hospitality is going to be affected no matter what. We have a lot of immigrants that work in our industry. They are sometimes their very first jobs, and we're their first employers, and we teach them how to do things. Again, we have the paperwork to make sure that they're doing this legally and are here legally, and they're just trying to find a new way of living and a new line of opportunity. And when these things happen and businesses don't have half the staff that show up because of different reasons or fear, or there's this want to shut everything down on like was yesterday and take your ESST and just tell your employer that it's okay to not go to work and you can use that. That is not how that should be used. I didn't support ESST when it came out. That was a heavy-handed mandate for all employers, but that the way that they're pushing it now is absolutely not the way it should be done. Those kinds of things are doing crippling damage, not just on that day, but it's also for days and weeks and months to come. So when people just throw up hurting more in a business, you somehow think that that's helping somebody. It's hurting way more the people that we're trying to help than it is trying to send a message somehow to federal agents or whatever it is. They don't think ahead about these kind of things. And that's what is really, really disappointing as well.
As we wrap here, my guest is Representative Dave Baker. He is a state rep, a Republican. He represents the Willmar area. We're talking about ICE in greater Minnesota, not just in the Twin Cities, its impact on the economy, on hospitality. Representative Baker, you're going to be back in session in just a few weeks. Obviously, the conversations are going to be tough. They're going to be tense, especially in a tied house. I know you recently had a conversation about connections between greater Minnesota and urban red legislators, between Democrats and Republicans. What's the spirit of kind of finding issues to move forward on that you think should be front and center in the upcoming session?
Well, the front and center items have to be fraud and, in Minnesota, affordability. I think that what I am hearing loud and clear is we can't afford to do this anymore here. And the way the fraud has gotten out of control, there's no secret about this. I mean, we don't know actually the amount of this. There's been so many things moving on the fraud level that will by far be, I think, a bipartisan effort to work on trying to stand up better guardrails, more accountability, getting rid of people that are looking the other way. That is got to happen. I appreciate what the fraud committee is doing. They're asking a lot of really good questions. So we are going to be ready for that. And the affordability thing, we cannot raise any more revenue. We don't have that issue here. It's a revenue issue. We're spending too much money. But now everything is distracted because of our immigration issues here in Minnesota. We have to get that better understood. And again, I think people can be treated better than they are once they're detained. We don't have to throw them around like we are. But again, ICE has a job to do. I don't pretend to get in that world. But I think politically, when we start the session, we need to work on the policies that we can agree on. And I think fraud and affordability will be the one and two items that we're going to be dealing with this year. So I want to believe we're going to get something done this year. I know it's a short session, but we've got to we got to lower the temperature around here in Minnesota right now to working together, cooler heads. The leaders really have to step up, and I'm hoping that this happens because I'm seeing it firsthand here in Willmar, and my community is hurting, and they're afraid.
Representative Dave Baker, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take.
Thanks, boys.
When we come back, more on where we're at, where we're going, and this week's take. I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to News Talk 830. WCCO. Welcome back to Sunday Take. I'm Blaise Olson. I again, want this week to be a pullback of the lens that we're looking at this in. And I understand people's urgency to look for a solution fast and now, but we've been in this solution for months. The solution isn't going to happen overnight. I think we know that from both sides. But you hear, and I think the perspective of Representative Dave Baker is important because he's from another town and so much is focused on Minneapolis, but this is impacting the whole state, Republican areas, Democratic areas. I'd also say that I think State Rep. Marian Rarick has also spoken up. Yesterday, she posted about how she trusts Drew Evans, that the state deserves to be trusted as honest in investigating these shootings. And I think that's the right word, is honest. What is it that is going to bring us back to honesty? That's the take. I talked about the Edelman Trust Barometer. I talked to Dave Baker. I talked about what we see and the fact that we're lacking leaders. One of the reasons we're lacking leaders is because they haven't been honest. And then they don't have our trust. And if they don't have our trust, why would we let them be our leaders? There's an election in Minnesota this year, and there's going to be a lot of time to prognosticate about who wins and who loses. We'll always cover that in the newsletters, and obviously with Vanita, and for crying out loud, it's only January. And it feels like 3, 4, 5 months have passed since Tim Walz announced he wasn't running again. And I do expect more political news this week, but just like last week, I said, ask questions at the door. I think it's time to look any leader in the eye and say, how can I trust that you're going to be truthful? The benefit of our own eyes is that, and our own ears, is that we no longer have to rely on the government narrative or the liberal or conservative media narrative. We can see things with our own eyes. And what we've given up for privacy and mental health means that nearly every single thing in public is recorded. And so let's just insist that everything happened in public. I'm not worried about the drama. I'm not worried about the political theater, as my friend Nate Garvis talks about it, because the show we've been watching isn't very good. And the show we want to watch is kind of dry. Imagine if politics was so boring because there was so much honesty and transparent good faith debate that people really listened. They really thought about things. From Wall Street to Main Street, it's time for an honest conversation with ourselves. Is this the state we want to live in? Is this the country we want to live in? And what am I doing to be more honest with myself about these feelings? And what are my leaders doing to be more honest about these actions and these feelings? That's the take this week. I mentioned before the end of the year last year that we were going to have to pace ourselves. I'll be honest. I'm the first one who has to pace himself. If every Sunday we are here to talk about this, it's not going to be a very fulfilling year. We're not going to get to the issues that matter, like housing, the economy, public safety. We're going to continue to be distracted by the drama that is that political theater I mentioned before. So all of those players who like to be on stage might want to give way to those behind the curtain, those who pull ropes and give cues. Because the show on the stage is more than a Shakespearean tragedy at this point. It's an American tragedy. It's a democratic tragedy. And it's something I never, ever thought I would live through. I'll be with Vanita Monday through Thursday at 6:20. We'll have updates at thedailyagenda.com. Morning Take will lead Monday with the latest news and dynamics. Until next week, that's the Sunday Take. I'm Blaise Olson. Thank you.